Let's go. Okay. So, Mike, I'll address that first question off, and we'll just kind of, let's just do a little Q&A, because I'm sure, I imagine you have questions before we get into some of the things that I asked. First and foremost, this is a real case. This is a current client that we are working with, and so everything in here, we've changed the industry and the names to protect the innocent, so to speak, but the numbers are real numbers, and the situation is a very real situation. So, Mike, you asked, what was the motivation behind having a minority shareholder development with the family board? Prior to Tim's passing, Tim was the CEO, chairman of the board, head of the family, head of the family council, made every and all decisions with respect to the business and the family. In many family business situations, that is very typical, is not atypical. And so to have, although the numbers represented a minority position in terms of the board was rather perfunctory. Although strong board members and a lot of intelligence there, it was rather perfunctory because it was Tim's board. Tim created the board, he brought the people on, and they more or less supported Tim's direction. So the concern of having a minority family situation in the board was a non-issue. And so therefore, they felt it was okay to do it because they really wanted to get some outside talent that the family didn't represent.
I have a question.
Yes.
Is it a fiduciary board?
Yes, it's a board of directors.
Okay, and what's the charter for the family council versus the board?
Good question, and it's something we're in the process of rewriting with them right now. The charter of the family council is to drive the family decisions and the shareholder decisions. So it's the family reunion that they do every year in July. It's the education of G7. It's setting up a philanthropic initiative. It's setting the vision and values and goals of the family, not the business. And that's really the family council's charter. On top of that, as shareholders, their primary responsibility is to elect members to the board, both family and non-family. Other than that, the family council wasn't really chartered with anything else. The second question was the charter of the board. Charter of the board is changing as well. And that's the one of, I'm kind of hinting as some of the things we're doing. The new charter of the board is one of our major pieces of work that we've been asked to do. As I said, primarily prior to that, there really wasn't a defined charter of the board. It was to support Tim in his direction, and he was doing a good job. At least the board felt he was doing a good job. And so, previously, the board's primary charter was to support Tim in his direction. That has since changed.
How long have you been involved with this?
We have been involved with this company now for 6 months, so relatively young. It's a young engagement. Mike, or Robert.
David, my read is that I'm in an industry that's flat to declining, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so the prospects for the future in terms of growth are slim to none?
Correct.
Okay. And
unless they reinvent themselves.
And innovation plays a big role in whatever they decide to do, if they do and reinvent themselves.
Correct, but the innovation that they're in now is very slow.
And Tim was the innovator, in which case, are there any other innovators in this business, or would they have to get outside innovation to do something different and go a new direction?
They'd have to bring in outside talent.
Okay.
Certainly outside the family, and even outside their existing management structure.
And funding to try such innovation, if they needed, I don't know, $20, $30, $50 million, do they have those kinds of pockets?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
No. So I was intrigued by the, over the years, the company's morphed from farming to plastics to toy. Have they had a vision? Have they had a strategy? Or is it just whatever looks like the hot thing they move into?
No, they had the real company had a very clear path in how they got to where they got. We made this up a little bit just so it wasn't obvious who the company was, because some of you may know who they are, and I didn't want that to happen. So the answer is they've had a very clear vision on how they got to where they are, and they are the 800-pound gorilla in their industry. And they've done extraordinarily well, but it's a rather tapped market.
And do they have a vision for, just as they've had a vision for each iteration, so with Tim's death, it was the death of vision?
Correct.
Okay.
Certainly within the family.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
But just financially, I'm looking at the thing, and okay, sales growth is 5%. Pretty decent. That's not bad.
Yep.
But sales and engineering are up 15%, so 3x the growth in sales. They're deleveraging very quickly. Admin is up 10, so they're up 2x the sales increase, but yet they don't have a new product. It looks like they're struggling to find out what either they're investing either in the sales or the engineering, and their margins decline. So they're increasing the volume, but they're doing it on lower prices. And it looks like the capital's going into inventory, so they're either not collecting the cash, or they're accumulating inventory, I'm assuming, and that's why the car ratio is going down.
The capital's going into equipment,
okay.
Not inventory. And this company, again, the real company, has massive equipment, massive capital expenditures.
So big, they're doing heavy their own plastics,
yeah.
Injection molding?
Correct.
Capital-intensive business.
Obviously. Very capital-intensive, and they have aging equipment. And
they're
so
making their own machine.
They're making their own product. Yeah. They're basically making their own product. And so it has become extraordinarily capital-intensive, and they have aging machinery. So they're trying to, it's kind of been duct tape and chewing gum for the last couple of years,
mm-hmm.
when now they're going to have to make a very large investment in order to overhaul the capital equipment.
Are they making everything in the U.S.?
It's all U.S. based.
And are they committed to that?
Yes.
So that's part of the family core values?
Yep.
Made in the U.S.
Is exit an option given legacy and this is seventh gen?
In other words, sale?
Yeah. Or is there even a buyer?
It's not an option right now. And I think it could be an option. They'd have to clean up the books and clean up the business and, you know, kind of put a coat of paint on it, so to speak. I don't think it's an option right now because of the emotional connection that they have with the business, given the recent passing of Tim.
Okay. What's the enthusiasm behind the G7s right now, the 16 of them? Are they pretty involved with the business? Do they seem like they, have you interviewed them? Are they excited about keeping it alive and going, or are they kind of off to do their own thing? That's key.
Great question. So when we did the interviews, we interviewed 42 people. Which is abnormally large. The average size company we would interview, you know, you're looking at maybe 10, 12 people. They wanted us to interview every single family member from G5, who were in their 70s and 80s, all of G6 and all of G7, which range from 12 to 25.
So what does the G7 say?
So the older G's, you know, the 12-year-old is, you know, she's worried about whether she's playing kickball tomorrow. The 20, you know, the older G7s are interested in the business. None of them currently work in the business, which I think is smart. They're kind of working somewhere else and cutting their teeth a little bit.
Okay.
But there is some expectation, particularly of Tim's son, to be, and you know, his vision is the heir apparent to his father and carry his dad's legacy to come into the business. Yeah, so there's some interest in, you know, I would be, if we were sitting here in 10 years, I wouldn't be surprised if there was maybe three or four of G7, but certainly not everybody.
But they're interested in the business, but do they have any ideas about the business?
In terms of innovation?
Yeah.
No, not right now.
And just one other question.
Yeah.
So the board candidates, is that the short list, and also the former employee, why is he a former employee? Did he leave to go check out another venture, or did he get fired and now he wants to come back? What's the story behind the former employee?
Good question. Okay, so it is a short list because this is a replacement of a family member,
mm-hmm.
so it's really only family eligible people. And there's a current unwritten rule that spouses will not occupy board seats.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at bloodline only. Okay, so that limits, even though there's a lot of family,
right.
it limits the talent pool.
Right.
So bloodline only. The gentleman who left the business He left, he was Tim's brother. He left because he and Tim butted heads on some stuff. Very talented, very bright guy, but he left the business due to some conflict that he and his brother were having on the strategic vision of the company. And now Tim's passed, he has an interest in then kind of re-engaging back into the board seat, which never would have been occupied had Tim been there. Make sense?
Yeah. Was that, it's not more of a vendetta against Tim, you know, to outperform Tim? Do you think if he was...
No, and he knows he's not capable of being CEO. He told me flat out, he goes, I don't have a vision of being CEO. I want to be on the board. I at some point might want to come back into the company as senior management, but I'm never going to run that company.
Great. Tim, what's your outlook for this business? You talked about 10 years and maybe some family members. Is that real based upon what I'm looking at?
Yes, I think it is real. I think you're. I'll be very candid and transparent with you. In some ways, the numbers. I'm waving this hand over here with the numbers. I'm really talking about something that's much, in our opinion, more serious than the numbers. Okay. So the numbers, in some ways, and frankly, Larry said, "Give me some numbers." Okay. So I gave him some numbers. I got to tell you, I don't talk about the numbers at all with the family. Okay. It's not their issue. It's not their issue. There are much bigger issues that we need to address right now. Don't forget, I'm only 6 months into this engagement. I've got to deal with a lot of other things before I can sit there and start talking about a strategic direction based on the financials that you see. So it's kind of a smoking mirror.
But it's pointed to a deterioration that they need to do something.
Correct. They're just not ready to deal with that.
Yeah.
I'm interested in Generation 7.
Yep.
How are the cousins getting along?
The cousins get along well, and I'm glad you asked that. So G5, okay, so let me back up. And I should have given you a genogram, and I didn't, but I can do it very...
Can you write on this?
I don't want to...
I can, right?
I don't know.
I think you're better off writing on the whiteboard.
Okay.
Someone tried earlier.
It doesn't look like a whiteboard.
Close to whiteboard.
All right, so the way it works is, there was Dad, and he was like G3, whatever it was. He actually had many sons, but he had really two sons, and he had a couple of illegitimate children as well that had really nothing to do with it, but I don't want to say he only had two kids. He only had two that we knew of, let's put it that way.
Right.
He had two sons, son one, son two. Son one, son two, when he was born, mom died in childbirth. The father was rather young when he had his children and basically was incapable of taking care of both kids. He chose to split the family. He kept son one and gave son two to his parents to raise. So the kids were not raised together. Okay? Son one, he was the CEO back when he became the CEO. He was always the redheaded stepchild, for lack of a better word. Okay, was always trying to match up to son one in Dad's eyes. All right. So where's the natural conflict going to happen? It's going to happen between these two, and that's exactly what happened. This is G5. So he was G4. This was G5. Still alive. One of them is passed. Son one died. Son two is in his now late 70s. Okay. Both married, his wife is still alive, is still alive, tremendous conflict here. And the family, G6, of which there was four on each side, I'm just going to do it quickly,
yeah.
Okay, they saw the two brothers kill each other for 20 years. And it almost split the business, and it didn't. What ended up happening was G6 learned a very, very valuable lesson as to family relationships. They're the ones who instituted the family council originally 20 years ago, because they did not want what happened with their father and uncle to happen with themselves. Then they go off and they have a whole generation of G7 with 16 kids in it. So 8 in this generation, 16 kids in this generation. The cousins get along well, to answer your question, Warren, because there's a history there,
right,
that they have learned from. It's why they hired folks like us to ensure that these things don't happen in the future. So they get along well.
Reminds me of the Sulzberger family in New York Times.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't crazy unusual. I mean, it may sound shocking. I'll tell you, nothing shocks me anymore. And what I hear, it's sad more than anything else.
Well, David, it strikes me that what this family wants is a family business, not necessarily this particular family business, since so few of them are immersed in this family business. So it brings me back to Robert's question before about possibly selling it. But if you just think of it as, so to speak, a portfolio situation,
yep.
For these people, if they just had the capital, would they deploy it in the direction that they that it's deployed in now? Probably not. The strategic situation that this business is in currently. So why not look to solve some of these positional issues in conjunction with, hey, let's...
through a transaction.
Let's harvest what we can here and change directions operationally, but put ourselves in a better position to achieve the family values, which are what we really care about.
Right. So the answer lies in the last sentence of the first paragraph, that the family sees the business as a legacy more than an asset. And so the real name, okay, has weight, has panache. It's the last name of the family, it's the business name, and they are very, very well known. And the thought of giving that up at this juncture is extraordinarily difficult. It's the name that's on the door. It's you walk through town, everybody knows your last name and who you are and what your seventh generation great, 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 great granddaddy built. And
but the hospital has their name on it,
you know, it could, and so I don't it could, and so that's an emotional attachment, Mike, that for us to sit in the cheap seats and advise what's the best business decision, what the best business decision isn't always the best family decision, and that's a struggle that they have. But what's important is that before we can even have a conversation like that, there are things that we need to be doing as advisors that we're in the middle, we're in the infancy of doing that. That's a conversation that we might be able to have in 9 months or a year from now, mm-hmm. but that's not the problem that the case, in my opinion, is representing. So if you think about us as the consultants, and my dad and I tag team on this one, we work together.
My point, David, was that if we think that's the right ultimate direction, then the kind of decisions that are being addressed today could influence how achievable that may be in 2 or 3 years.
I agree, but the challenge is that what they don't have is the ability to make that decision. The structure, to make effective business decisions, you have to have an effective decision-making body, and in my opinion, an effective structure in order to make those decisions. That's what they don't have. And the reason why they're missing that is because Tim, prior to his passing, he was it. He was the decision maker. This was not a democracy. He made every and all decision, and the family supported it. They may have rumbled under their tongue a little bit. Tim was G6. So he was the oldest. Okay, good point. Thank you. He was the oldest son of the oldest son. Okay, so his daddy was the CEO, passed the heir down to Tim, who was the oldest child of this downline. The oldest son in this downline also passed away. Okay? And so the two oldest boys, coincidentally, have passed. So Tim was the oldest son and he was the oldest of the entire family, because there's about 10 years between these two guys. So he was by far the oldest of G6, and he has since passed. So you can see why the oldest son, in this case, it could have been the oldest daughter, but history shows that it's often the oldest son. He was the heir of the family. He was the leader. And often the CEO of a family business is the CEO of the family, which is not uncommon.
And I always find it astounding for family businesses that they don't necessarily act in their own economic best interest, to your point.
Right.
And so the decision is an emotion-based family decision rather than what's in the best interest long-term. How do you, legacy is defined very differently in family businesses mm-hmm. than in any other entity. Mm-hmm. And yep. so the questions I have are around the emotionality. How did Tim die?
Tim had terminal cancer, about a two-year death.
And so in that two-year period, did he do anything to frame the business for the future survival?
Yes. And so the non-family CEO that we talked about in the case is a 20-year veteran of the business. He was the COO. Tim, there was no, the issue that they struggled with from a family perspective is there was no clear heir apparent from the family. So Tim had no one to pass this down. Nobody in G6 was capable of running the company. Smart, bright people, but not capable of running a, you know, $80 million corporation. The COO was. And so he groomed him over the last couple of years, certainly when he became ill and he knew that, unfortunately, this was his demise, he really groomed him to be the COO. And, you know, it was crazy. He was on his deathbed a week before, and he was running meetings. It was unbelievable, you know. And the ironic thing is this guy's literally at death's door, showing up in the office, running meetings, and the other family member, one of his cousins, you know, had the sniffles and took 4 days off. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff you see in family businesses.
Right, exactly.
So yes, your short answer is he groomed the COO to run it. So the first time in the company's history, they have a non-family CEO.
And how does the family feel about that?
Very positive, very positive.
They like the guy?
They like him, they knew him. He was a member, you know, he was a member of the family for a long, long time. They have good relationships. And they know that he was the one who was absolutely most capable to run that business.
So is he confident?
Very.
Is he capable of growing the company?
Yes, he is. He's capable. He doesn't have the vision that Tim has. He's capable of growing it, certainly capable of sustaining it. Yeah, absolutely.
David, just given the emotionality that you described.
Yeah.
And I don't have that. I don't come from a family business. Mm. Starting one up, so I may get there, but what does success look like for this family entity and the majority of the, whether it's all of G7, part of G7, G6, et cetera, what's success look like? Because in some ways, familial lifestyle businesses are an odd mix, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's less about financial performance and it's more about having fun. I've been in those businesses. And then with others, you know, if you work for a shareholder-based company that's publicly traded, it's generally always about financial performance. And who cares who's at the helm as long as we're achieving. So what's success?
Well, your shareholder, you know, in a publicly traded company, right? It's a shareholder.
What's success look like for these guys?
Yep, I'll hit
and
that.
What are they realizing, maybe this is part of the same point, what are they realizing financially from this company now?
Okay, so they're not realizing much. Distributions historically have not been much. They basically reinvest in the company, and that's been a value and a mantra in the business. The goal, and so the goal of the engagement, okay, which will really dictate the success, has nothing to do with what the business future outlook looks like. The goal of the engagement in their minds was, we want to be able to create an effective family governance structure, an effective board, and basically hit the reset button while preserving the family.
Right.
That's the goal. It wasn't about, you know, how do we deal with the fact that the current ratio is changed, that profitability is down, that revenues are down, or actually revenues are up, but expenses are up. We haven't even reviewed, you know, we have reviewed the full financials. We haven't even talked about it with the family yet. Yeah.
So for them, it's reputational value.
That's it's making sure that this doesn't happen.
Right.
It's preserving the family legacy,
right,
the values, in the mission of the family via the business.
Just say, I'm part of this family business.
Yeah.
So, question for you too. Now there's like 50 family members involved, and you said you interviewed over like 48 of them.
Yeah.
Are they okay with just another patriarch? You know, are they okay with, or are they, I mean, it sounds like Tim, he was the judge, the jury, the executioner, if they're okay with that, I mean, are they okay? Do they want that continued? Do they want, are they a democracy a democratically minded family group now? Do they want to keep, you know?
Well, who could do that?
Well, I'm just saying, would they rather give the keys to someone who can assume the judge, jury, executioner role,
right?
Or would they rather take some powers onto themselves, you know, in more of a democratic system?
So they want to take on a democratic system for two reasons. One, there's no one that could, there's no Tim. There's nobody that could be the judge, jury, and executioner anymore. It can't be the non-family CEO because he's got nothing to do with the family. So this is where the dynamic in family business dramatically changes when you bring in a non-family CEO. His responsibility, his fiduciary responsibility is to the board. The board's fiduciary responsibility is to the shareholders, and it stops there. He can't go into the family council and basically determine entry criteria for family members in a business. He's got no say in it on that.
So it's almost like a business you're going to have, it's going to be your role, of course, but it's almost going to have to put this new system through business 101. It's been a patriarchal, you know.
It's governance 101.
Yeah, governance. It's been such a one-person show. Now
correct.
It's up to you guys to sort of teach them all how to be democratic together.
That's why I use the analogy of hitting the reset button. And the families actually really liked
that analogy. And they're excited to do that. They're
they
excited.
Love that analogy.
Right. So
because although they were happy with the way Tim did it, they want the opportunity to have a voice.
Great.
And they didn't have that voice under Tim's leadership. Tim didn't give them the voice. And they were okay with it because the company was doing all right and it was doing okay. But now they have an opportunity to have a voice. And so there's a lot of family members that are kind of, it's a little bit of can't think of the expression.
Where were you 10 minutes ago sort of thing, and now that the opportunity is there?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a fight for power
yeah.
right now that's happening and a little bit on the family divide. There's definitely a jockeying for position as to who is the new heir apparent to the family? Who's the new family leader?
The ownership is fairly equal. You had 2 and 2 and then 4 and 4.
Yep.
So I'm assuming that there's no real dominance in ownership.
Equity ownership, there's you're absolutely right. And then across the 16, it's more or less equal. Give
so
or
you
take
don't
a
have any
two.
Kind of consolidation that's going to happen.
He owned 50%. He owned 50%. It was passed. It can only be passed bloodline only.
Yep.
Cannot go to non-family, so it can't go to spouses. Bloodline only. Equity shares can be passed down to bloodline only to your heirs. Voting rights only get transferred upon death. So now Tim, who passed, has 3 children, 26, 25, and 21. At 25, your voting rights get activated and they become now part of the family council. So these 2 kids are the first 2 kids and G7 that are part of this family council that can actually vote. This 21-year-old, she can't vote until she turns 25.
How many family council members are there?
There are 6 plus 2 is 8. The G5s are no longer, they graduated out at like age 70.
Okay.
They age out of being in the family council. So it's these 6 members of the family council, of which 3 and 3 are actually voting shareholders because the other 3 are spouses.
Right.
They're all married still, no divorces.
Okay.
And the two
kids. Newbies. And my board of directors are they a board of directors or a board of advisors?
Board of directors, fiduciary responsibility, 5 non-family board, and 3 board. So let's talk about that. 3
yeah.
family members.
Okay, so who out of this charter are on that board?
3 of the G6 are on the board.
Okay.
And also in the family council, or no?
And also on the family council.
Oh.
Yep, so you have 3 board, chairwoman of the board. So
a spouse or?
No, no spouses can be on the board. Bloodline is the daughter of this gentleman.
Yep.
Is on the board. Tim appointed her chairwoman.
Okay.
She's the first woman to be the chair of the board. So she's chairing it, and then the other 2 members are, excuse me, one of the other board members is one of the brothers, Tim's younger brother, and then he is still on the board.
Oh.
So that's the 3 family members.
Got it.
Okay? On the board, and then you have 5 non-family. So let's just talk about that for a second. 8 board members. Any problems with that?
Even number.
Yeah.
I bet that's reared its head.
Yep. So we talked about it and what it was. So the problem is that they don't have, what this board does not have, they don't have entry and exit criteria for the board. So the board members, there's no term limits on the board right now. So they have had board members that, you know, one of the board members is 75 years old. He's got all of his facilities, he's there, he's incredibly talented, but he's been there for, he's been on the board for 20 years. And he's been Tim's guy all along.
Where do they find these non-family board members?
Board search. They've done formal board searches. Most of them are local, within a state or two, so it's a New England-based company, and it's a New England-based board.
So they're truly independent, though, despite tenure?
Yep. 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 But what was the purpose of the board historically?
For this company, or?
Yeah.
Well, to back Tim.
Right.
Tim's decisions.
Yeah. Tim never even presented a budget. Historically, it was you know, by Q2 he kind of presented the numbers, but there was never a formal budget approval process. So the challenge with a board like that is, where's the accountability?
That goes back to the charter. Or the lack thereof.
Are they open to amending these bylaws?
The family is, and the board is too. And so one of the things we were brought into, so right now what we have is, we have basically two committees out of the family council. And the two committees, one is chartered with a board, they're basically a board committee, and they're kind of rewriting the rules of the game from a board perspective. And the second committee is the family council committee, and they're rewriting the rules as to how the family council works. And we split those into two, and are running basically two parallel paths with those two committees to rewrite the rules of the game for the family overall, is the way we look at it. So let me ask you a couple of questions. What are the things that we should be considering that maybe, you know, given everything that we've talked about, you know, what should we be considering with this family?
The question that's unresolved for me is the motivation of them. We keep talking about still a business, and I don't hear the finances of that. How interested are they in what comes out of the business?
So in the case, one of the things we wrote is there's differing opinions as to the financial stability of the business. What we didn't tell you was, where's the differences of opinion? The differences of opinion lie between management and the family. So the family believes, including the CEO, believes that the finances are okay, that they are doing well, even though the current ratio has grown and expenses are growing. They understand why. They justify those expenses. They understand the sales and what's going on. They do believe they are well positioned. And it's not for me to say whether they are or they aren't. They very well, if they believe they are, you know, let's talk through that. The people that are concerned are some of the senior sales teams, and one of the board members is concerned about
non-family board member.
One of the non-family. So the family is in agreement. So again, my job, right? I'm a family business consultant. I'm not a McKinsey guy. So my job is to come in and help the family make effective, good decisions from a family perspective. Whether they're the right business decisions or not, the family needs to support that. Now, if I think they're driving off a cliff, you know, we need to talk about that.
So
what's going on from a talent development standpoint with G7? Because that, to me, if this is, I want this legacy, I don't want my name to disappear, all that stuff. You know, is there an active talent development for that? That level?
So the way talent development is actually going to happen is through the family council, and by exposing G7 to process, to governance through the family council, and at some point through potential board representation, that is one of the ways to groom G7. The other way that they have is, they have entry criteria where no G7 family member can come into the business until they've worked 5 years out somewhere else inside the business.
Have they gone to business school or any formal, anything like that, mentor programs?
One is in law school. She just got into, she's really struggling. She got into Harvard, Yale, and somewhere else, and she's trying to figure out where to go.
Times are tough.
So yeah, times are tough. Incredibly bright kid. So she's on her way to law school, and her younger brother is not in business. He works at Harvard, but he's not in business school.
So I don't have business people, but they're going to help lead this company.
Maybe, maybe not. It depends. It's not. So part of the entry criteria is, which I think is really solid for them, is just because your last name is Smith doesn't mean you get to work at Smith Corporation. You need to prove that you have the proper acumen, the background, and that there's a need in the business. So this grooming, this non-family CEO, part of his responsibility will be to groom that younger generation, which could take a decade, easily a decade.
But you also said that they're not being groomed for the business; they're being groomed for the family council and for the board, which is a very different track and
yep.
a very different focus.
That's right.
The question that I had about the family council and the family's awareness of the current situation of the company is how often are there family business meetings where the family comes together for a strategic review of the business, the competitive marketplace, and where the business stands in that?
So who should be in that meeting?
Well, there's two ways of approaching it, and I've seen both be successful. One is, you know, a week-long family offsite called Everything You Need to Know About the Business.
Yep.
And where, for those family members who know nothing about business, there's kind of sessions around business 101. So you're educating the family.
Which they've done.
Okay, they've done that. So then it's the totally transparent presentation by management and the board about where the business is, where it's going, and what's necessary. So everybody in the family understands it's not just the family council.
Correct. And so let me build on what you're saying. Once a year, they do a family assembly where the entire family gets together. And they've been doing that for 15 years. That is where the family 101 education comes in. The business comes in. They talk about the business to the kids. They let them play with the products, all that kind of stuff. So those kids grow up understanding what this family business is. They will also break out and do family council meetings and talk about what's going on within the business. The line that needs to be drawn, and which is fuzzy in families, is it's really the board's responsibility to set the vision and the direction for the business, of which the shareholders elect the board, and there are three family members on that are shareholders. It is not where we're trying to draw lines of separation is, we don't believe it's the family council's responsibility
I completely agree, but I don't think it's the board's responsibility. It's management's responsibility for the board to approve and to work with management.
Well, so this is where we may disagree. Our philosophy is it's the board's responsibility to set the vision and the direction. It's the CEO and his or her management team's job to execute on the vision that the board has and for them to come back up. So it's a top-down and then down-top process, right? The board sets the vision and the strategy. The CEO then works with his or her team to create the plan as to execute that the board then approves. To me, that's a positive process within any board structure, publicly traded or privately held.
That's not, true governance is not the board setting vision and strategy. It's management setting it, bringing it to the board, having the board understand the board's job is not to answer the question of where this company is going. The board's job is to ask the question of where is this company going, how can we support you, or do we disagree, and let's get into debate. The governance structure should not be setting vision and strategy.
Okay.
That's a violation of strong governance.
We have five more minutes.
Okay. It seems like one of the core issues that they're going to have to deal with fairly soon is what is the risk tolerance of the family? Because it would seem to me that you're probably going to have to shake up the board. You're probably going to want some change there because you've got to change the strategic direction at some point in your company. And you're going to want to have, if the board wasn't really engaged before because Tim basically drove and they just sat on the bus, you need someone who's now, you've got somebody new, you're going to want to have some fresh blood overseeing this. But the board's then got a responsibility to the shareholders who are the family, and it would seem that the family council almost has to talk to the board about what should, what is their risk tolerance? You know, is it still to preserve the name? Or if we need to make a strategic direction, how is that going to, a strategic change, how is that going to affect the board makeup? Who do we want to have on the board to help drive that?
Right.
And then do you actually have the management team to then execute whatever that, you know, because I think your COO, he's probably going to keep doing the same thing. And the question is he still the right guy?
Right.
And then that's the board's decision, is he still the right guy? So to some extent, I think the strategy comes back to the board, because if they don't think he's the right guy, that's going to change the strategic direction.
But the board makes the decision that the CEO can either set the vision and strategy or not. That's where the board comes in. You know, the board's primary responsibility is CEO succession. And it, So if they're not hearing anything about vision or strategy from the CEO, then it's the board's job in non-family businesses to step in and say, we fire the CEO. In family businesses and in private companies, there's not that level of accountability and right that the board has. In a public company, the board, the CEO reports to the board.
It depends. It depends. It depends on what guidelines and what structures and what pieces they, what rules they agree to as
right.
to what the role of the board is.
But it's not that cut and dry, is what my point in a family business in a private company, as it is in a public company.
Well, no, correct. It's
a
little different. Let me just share something for a second. When we look at governance structures, okay, and in family business, you have the family, okay? You have the family council, which is a subset. Generally, in this case, it's an elected group that is a subset of the family. In this case, in the case of this family, it will be comprised of both G6 and G7 members. Eligibility is age 21 up to age 70. You can be eligible to be on the family council. Okay, and it's a number between 7 and 9 people will be on the family council, representative of both shareholders and non-shareholders, spouses, could be on this family council. Then you have the shareholders, which are family members, bloodline only, 25 and older of a deceased family member can get voting rights. Equity can go down to family members at really any age. The 12-year-old has equity, but she's a shareholder, but she's not a voting. Okay, so we had to really differentiate with this family the difference between a voting shareholder and a non-voting shareholder, Class A, Class B shares.
Right.
The shareholders are the ones who elect the board. They make the decision as to who the board is, both family and non-family members. Then, in a traditional environment, right, the board goes down to the CEO then manages his team in this case. All right. This is a bi-directional relationship, right? The board works, the CEO works for the board, you know, really ultimately works for the shareholders, and the job is to pass the message down. In this case, it's become almost more clear because now you have a non-family. Where there's a family member, it's like, what hat are you wearing? And that's always a struggle.
Yeah, the board of directors was chosen by the man who was running the company, Tim.
Correct.
Now it's the other way around. The shareholders will choose the board.
Correct. Now the shareholders are going to be choosing the board. So now they're going to be putting in this structure. We're setting term limits.
Right.
So we're rewriting. I mean, guys, it's like we're keeping the bodies intact, but we're rewriting everything else in terms of what the charter of both the family council is and the board. This is a brand new structure. Although there was a family council in place, in fact, they called it the family forum, the only criteria to be on the family forum was you had to be older than 25 and younger than 70. That's it. So it was all bloodline and spouses could be on the family forum. And the problem is that at some point everybody's going to be over 25 and most everybody will be under 70, so you're going to have 40 people on a family forum. It's a completely ineffective decision making body when this body is designed to make decisions. So we had to rewrite.
What decisions did they make?
Could be decisions on what's the philanthropic goal of the family? How do we educate the next generation? Decisions around, do they create a family bank? Decisions around setting policy for entry criteria into the family. That sits at this level. It doesn't sit at the shareholder level. It doesn't sit at the board.
Right.
It sits at the family council level. So, you know, they have to start making, and they have it in place already, and they're going to rewrite it, but they are going to start to set policy with respect to the family as it relates to the business. That's the goal of the family council in this case. So that's what's unique. I mean, family business, that's where, you know, this doesn't exist in a non-family business. This does, and this does. But these two entities, which are really the difference here, and this is where this case lives. This case doesn't live at this level yet. It lives here. So creating a family council, how do they create it? Who's on it? What decisions are made, you know, and the questions I'm asking you guys are, you know, what decisions is made by the family council and what decision are made by the board?
Okay, we are now to a soft stop. We can continue this, or people who need to leave certainly are free to.
Yep. I'll stay for another 15, 20 minutes, whatever we want.
Dave, wouldn't the family council kind of move and be between the shareholders and the board? So in other words, the shareholders elect people to be on the family council that probably recommend people for the board, and then the shareholders would vote on it, and then the family council can provide guidance to the board, but aren't involved in the actual governance of the business.
So I can see your point there. The family council is not elected by the shareholders. The board is elected by the shareholders. The family elects the family council.
Right, but I guess what I'm thinking is the family, you've got the spouses and everything else in there that maybe have influence, but they're not necessarily shareholders. So the family as a subset is a broader universe than the shareholders. And then I think the family council as being a subset of the shareholders.
No, because you can be a non-family, you can be a non-shareholder and be on the council.
Spouses 21
years old, and spouse and anybody that's in the family can be on the council. Because the council's the council's goal is about setting policy with respect to the family, not necessarily within the board and the shareholder level. So, which is, that's where it gets a little confusing. Because there's representation, you know, people are wearing all sorts of hats.
Right.
Yeah, that is.
And we have this incredibly complex model. I didn't bring it with me, but it's incredibly complex. We call it the multi-roles model, and you know, it's like 15 or 16 different permutations of what role you're in, depending on what quadrant you sit in.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see how it can get complex.
Mike?
Yep.
Well, two things I'm curious about, David. One is what I consider an anomaly, and that is that the family doesn't draw income from the enterprise.
They don't draw distributions.
Right.
Yep.
Second is that this family enterprise has exceeded a certain rule of four-generation dispersal of family wealth. You may be familiar with the case study that compares the Rockefeller family and the Rothschild family.
I'm not.
I think it's one of the classic studies that underscores this point of, you know, four generations before the wealth is so widely dispersed, it doesn't really have any traction anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me wonder, this family is now in its seventh generation, and it's not drawing income from it. So there's something else going on here, quite apart, you know, from the typical perpetuation of family enterprise. And that's why I think that, going back to the remark I made before, they obviously get a certain amount of prestige from the branding. But it doesn't seem that there really is any connection to a particular business like this business. You know, there's another motivation for maintaining this entity, the family council, and trying to keep the linkage with the business. So few people are involved in the business, interestingly, by design, which is not such a bad idea.
No, in fact, it could be a good idea.
Exactly.
Okay.
Are we done?
No, we can keep going. If you have to take off, take off.
I'm just letting you know that, you know, the door is open if it needs to be.
Yeah, no, if you gotta take off, take off.
Well, I feel bad we haven't given you a solution yet.
I haven't, well, I don't know. To somewhat to Mike's point, I mean, obviously, their reputation and prestige trumps all the factors associated with business performance at some level, right?
Correct.
I mean, if this was gonna take down the family, the sense of urgency, we'd probably be having a different conversation. It seems to me that relative to the decisions, the board's responsibility would be for this to be an ongoing, sustainable firm where reputation is a priority. We don't want this thing to go off the cliff.
And the family isn't asking for distributions.
I understand.
Right.
So, and then the family council decisions might be associated with things associated with family bank, family office, philanthropy, anything that's reputation-based.
Yep.
And for the preservation of this for our family for generations to come, which might take them in a different direction than the board of directors focusing on this particular business entity.
Yeah,
because the two in some ways are kind of, one feeds the other, but the family isn't necessarily feeding the business. The business is feeding the family in some ways, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Let's focus on one thing. So this board election, so the case presented that an election is coming up. Okay, and there's three people running. The two family members that are in the business in non-senior management positions. Okay, they're just employees. Good guys, employees. And there's and the other person running for the board position is the family member who was once in the company but is no longer there.
Who nominated them?
Other family members.
Are they capable? The other two are
capable of being on the board? In just skill set wise? Yeah, I think they could be on the board. They're not an A player. They're probably a B minus player, but I think they'd be okay. I think there's more talent out there. But they could be on the board.
Is this to add a ninth or to replace the eighth?
To replace Tim.
Okay, so are they going to drop down to seven eventually or add up to nine? What do you guys recommend?
Good question. They are going to be dropping down to seven. They have chosen to stay with eight. So the gentleman who I talked about earlier, the 75-year-old guy, non-family, who's been there for a while, the family asked that he stay on the board for another year as they manage through this transition because of his history. And they have really never come into a situation where they've had to make a vote where it's been so split. Generally, the votes, again, Tim ran it, so Tim was the decision maker,
right.
But the board has never been faced with a difficult position where it's been, you know, four against four.
So he'll step down?
He will step down in a year, and they will go to seven.
And you think the shareholders will really cry, you know, foul over the fact that they're adding another family member and not a non-family?
No, they're fine with that. No. So they're gonna. So it'll be three and four, is what it will be.
And those are the only people who are nominated.
Those three are the only family members. So it's got to be a family member.
No, I understand.
Those are the only three family members that have been nominated. Yeah. So now you have a non-family CEO, and you have these three family members running for a board seat. What are the potential challenges that you see?
Well, they're probably still in Tim's vision, right? These guys are still, you know, drinking the Tim Kool-Aid in the sense that they were under his management per se, right?
The board.
Tim's vision. Yeah, there were employees that are running that were bred under Tim's system. So I imagine if they were elected, they would be still pushing Tim's innovations, Tim's ideas, which could be could be with the COO. I mean, with the guy who's non-family, you know.
The new CEO.
Right.
Okay, you're going down a path. You're going down the right path.
So I could be bringing in somebody on the board who was a B player who asked tough questions, and the board might not be happy with the tough questions. Board might not agree with that. So there's one against
a disruptor,
seven, eight, whatever it is.
Yep, could be. Yeah.
So my worry is with the CEO that he's also in Tim's image. Tim groomed him, brought him up. So they're not.
And the family supports that.
And the family supports that, which is great. But you said he's not a visionary, and he's not necessarily the person who's going. So by bringing in board members who are also workers, family members who also are workers,
Take care.
They
good luck with everything.
It's very hard to challenge a CEO if he's your boss.
Good point.
That's exactly where we were going, which you were kind of going down that path. The issue is, if you elect, so the decision's already been made, and I'll tell you what happened. If you elect one of the two family members that are currently in the business in non-senior positions, you're putting the CEO in an extraordinarily difficult position. Mm-hmm. Because all of a sudden, you've now just elevated two line employees to be the CEO's boss, right? The CEO reports to the board.
Right.
You've just put one of these guys in a position that the CEO now is reporting to this guy, yet in 9.5 out of 10 days of the week,
right,
he's got to run them.
Right.
And so you're putting, you if you do that, you put the CEO in an extraordinarily difficult position. Because also, these are, at best, C+B players in the business. Little entitled, little lazy. This is one of the guys who had the sniffles and didn't show up for 2 days. Meanwhile, his older brother has terminal cancer and he's running board meetings. So you've got this issue of talent and the CEO having to manage the problems with these two family members that everybody else, all other 250 employees, they know the deal. They see them every day. So that was the problem. So what the family did was they saw that as the issue, and they knew it. And the CEO was very open with the chairwoman of the board and said, listen, you do this, you're putting me, you're tying my hands is what you're doing. You're handcuffing me. And so they elected the other individual to do it. And it was also part of Tim's plan. Tim had recommended, the family had a vote. Shareholders had a vote after Tim passed. But Tim strongly suggested to the chair, who is his cousin, that this other gentleman be on the board and not put the CEO in a difficult position. But it's an interesting family problem. Bruce, good to see you. Take care.
And that COO never wanted to be elevated to the board himself and then replace the CEO?
No. No, and it wouldn't have been appropriate to do that. In a family situation, to bring in, I don't think
it would be. A non-family was stepping down, you could have replaced them with that perfect non-family.
Correct, no, they didn't do that.
I see we're gathering things together. Maybe it is time to call.
So I hope it's an interesting case. I hope it was useful discussion tonight. Always appreciate the opportunity to come to this group. It's always
good.
A great group. So
thank you
very much.
Thank you, David.
All right, guys.
We'll give you a round of applause.
It's a very fast.